Justice Berger. There seems to be a consensus in the room that I should have a few words to say. I don't particularly have anything to testify, except I would like to comment on something that Mrs. Eleanor McMullen said, that one of the things that the Alaska Native Claims Act has done to the Native community, and I guess I might be more specific, Port Graham, which I'm a member of the community and a shareholder of its corporation, that we were dumped on, it invoked some thoughts of my growing up in the village, as she talked about growing up in the village. And as Ralph Hensley, the school teacher, spoke, I considered the education, and I thought and related to myself the analogy of my education to Eleanor is being dumped on by the federal government and its imposition of the corporate structure to the Native community in exchange for their Aboriginal rights. As I was growing up, I was raised primarily by my grandfather. My primary language naturally had to be the Native Aleut tongue. English was foreign to me up until I entered grade school. So as I considered my education, as I think about it in reflection, I struggled with the English language, and I often wondered why I had so much trouble with the other disciplines. And it just occurred to me, as I was trying to understand English, I was being taught other disciplines with that very same language. And if I'm going to have trouble with the English language, or if they use the English language to explain mathematics, geography, and all the other disciplines to me, it's going to be a little hard. It's going to be a little difficult. And when Eleanor said, we got dumped on as far as ANSCA is concerned, and I could relate to that. I was expected to be a part of the corporate leadership or a part of the leadership to implement a law that was brought about by, as our village chief, Walter McGannick, said, maybe a possibility of 300 people made that decision for 80,000 people. At the time, the act was in its formative years or was being created. I was in college. I knew very little about the activities of Congress and our Native leadership. It wasn't until maybe 1972, 73 that the implications of this law began becoming clearer to me. It was frightening. I thought it was frightening then. I think it's even more frightening today because of what it implies in terms of what we may lose. I like to think positively. I'm still optimistic that we can do something with it. We have to. We don't have any other choice. But as I look at my community, my relatives, and I consider being dumped on, has it increased the quality of our life? It's been mentioned that in early days, I can remember that, my grandfather was a very traditional Native person, believed in sharing. I can remember days when the guys would go up the slough, get a half skiff load of tom cods. Everybody come down to the beach, help yourselves. I can remember when the guys would go out seal hunting, wintertime, fall time, throw a dozen seals on the beach, come on down, help yourself. I don't see that anymore. I think the introduction of cash, which was previous to the act, of course, but the act is also based on the cash economy. The concept is, anyway. It was mentioned that a value is being placed on everything. Not the kind of value Eleanor was talking about, but cash value. And it's difficult for especially those who have lived a traditional life to understand or to relate to cash, or to relate cash value to what we shared and we hunted on. I can remember back when BLM came in and surveyed our lands here. The older people could not understand why we were staking out lots. This is mine. It was always believed and considered to be ours as a community. There began the division, and it's continued. And that dumping on has not increased the quality of our life, I don't believe it has. I think it's increased the complexity of our life. It's introduced us into a community that is foreign to most of us, and to those of us that were fairly young and became involved, it's just now beginning to become something we can understand, but the process is, again, frightening. It's scary. But we continue to struggle. It's a law that was mandated by the U.S. government, accepted by the Native people. of course, we're many years into it now, in the implementation of it. Now the big fear is 1991. 1991 strikes fear in many Native leaders. And if the shareholders of the Native community would, if the shareholders that aren't involved or don't understand need to understand what 1991 implies, and implies what our chief Walter McGannick said, the analogy is the fishing permits or the limited entry that was imposed on us. It has the very same kinds of implications. How many of us are going to sell out our shares? As the law stands today, those shares include those lands that are with the corporate holding. How long will it take for our shares or our ownership of a corporation and our control of that corporation to be diluted? We own or are entitled to in excess of, in Port Graham, excess of 60 some odd thousand acres of land, which we are free and are allowed to hunt on. What's to happen when that ownership is diluted so that we no longer control the direction and the policy of that corporation? Some other corporation may come in and buy up in excess of half, taking over controls and establish a policy: you can no longer fish or hunt on these lands. Those are some of the kinds of things that strike fear in those of us that want to protect. I don't believe it's ours. It's our kids. Those kids that were born after 1971, the only real benefit that they'll realize is if they inherit stock from relatives and continue and are allowed to continue to hunt and use the land as we've always used it. And again, the older leadership at the time the law was passed, I think that's what they intended, was to maintain ownership of the land. Many corporations today are selling out. It's scary. In closing, because I feel that the commission is a valuable tool. It's reaching out to people that have not been allowed to be heard from. And I would urge all of you, just a few comments to come up and help the judge put together a good review. I would like to welcome Judge Mrs. Berger and the commission to Port Graham, my home. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tevens.
Not a very good speaker, but I'm Lydia Robart, and I'm from Port Graham. I was born and raised here. I'd like to say briefly that I'm proud to be Alaska Native. Ever since my teenage and to this present day being a Native, we've had a lot of unity and to be proud of it. And knowing the ANSCA, our identity became stronger and noticed throughout the state and internationally. But as the village level and three generation passed, we've seen a lot of change. All of a sudden, we became business people overnight, as after ANSCA was passed. We've had our ups and downs, and we experienced the business level and how to resolve our problems and our needs. And that was the help of our Native leaders throughout this village. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Is open to anyone. Anybody wants to say. And I got a note here. It says, "Never mind about the law. Speak about what concerns you from the heart." It's not necessary. You don't have to know the Native land claim to speak. Important is what concerns you and the source of service. That's where the danger area is. How it's going to affect our source of service in 1991, it's very important. Okay?
My name is Larry Hedrick. I'm not a shareholder, but my wife is a Native and shareholder and has an allotment. And you start talking about taxes, and I sat there wondering. I have four children, and the land is willed to them. And I'm wondering, in 1991, how I'm supposed to pay taxes on a property that's valued at $160,000. And have no income to pay it. And the property is inaccessible because there's no right-of-ways to it. So it can't turn a dollar to pay the taxes. And consequently, when taxation time comes up, that land's going to be eaten up a little bit at a time. And when it comes time for the children to inherit it, it's gone.
Well, the allotments aren't taxable, but corporate land is. Your wife's land cannot be taxed. Native allotments can't be taxed. So the people that hold allotments are going to be okay after 1991. But it's the land, the 60,000 acres, that this village corporation received that might be taxed after 1991. So that's the difference there. And so the people with allotments don't have to worry about taxes. What's your wife's name?
Fedora. Hedrick.
Yeah, thanks. That's the point you wanted. That's the one piece of good news. The allotments can't be taxed.
Native allotment is not deeded under the trusteeship. So therefore, they cannot be taxed. Or you own them, yet you don't own them. You have to go to the federal. If you want to sell it, any part of it, your wife has to go to BIA to have approval. They'll sell part of it. It's restricted, yet can be handled, unrestricted part of it. I hope this is the answer. Everybody's question on Native allotment. Native allotment are safe, except corporation land, which we receive somewhere around 93,000 acres. It'll be four townships anyhow. Okay.
My name is Agnes Meganic. I've been put in a position where I'm not really actively involved with the changes or anything with Alaska, the Native Land Claims. Where I've been was being able to watch my people, my families, my brothers, my father work with the things that are happening with the corporations, the regional corporations and the village corporations. And I don't know if the people, I work as a community health representative here in the community. And if I'm seeing if the same people are the same people with Alaska Native Land Claims who started this, are the same people in the public assistance offices, the state, if they're the same people. I've had to work with people with health bills, with the Social Security offices and stuff. And they act like they're trying to take everything instead of trying to help the people that need help. I see people, I worked with one man since November 83 to November 84 to get about $8,000 worth of medical bills done, you know, paid for. And that took a lot of money to even get $8,000 paid. And I'm wondering if it's going to be just as hard in 1991, if it's already starting. And I don't know, as I look back, when it first started, I knew something, you know, important was happening, that some changes were happening. And I'd like to comment that I'm very proud of the people that have stepped out to be leaders, to be target people. You know, when you're a leader, you're a target. Everybody throws at. And I'd like to thank them. And I hope you can do something. And that's the position where I've been put, be able to watch the people be leaders in our community.
Thanks very much, Ms. Meganic. We have lots of time, and I know some of you do have views that we should hear tonight. We have a microphone that we take around the room, so you don't have to leave your chair and come up here. And it may be that some of you would feel a little more comfortable just seated where you are, and maybe we'll.
Minutes pause.
Okay, 5 minute. Well, I was just going to say that, yeah. And I think that's a good idea. Maybe we could take a coffee break, yeah. And then start again in a few minutes.
Don't go away.
No, the doors are locked. Don't leave town. Start out with it, and everybody wants to do it.
You got a long mic, maybe you walk. Right.
Maybe some people want to speak in Aleut and we need an interpreter for
them. Let's come back to the meeting, please.
This one's speaking.
Try it. Well, maybe we could start the meeting again. I think we have a couple of young people who are going to start off now, and both of you sit down there and just give me your names. And
Anna Marie McGannick.
Anna Marie McGannick.
Rachel McGannick.
Rachel McGannick.
The kid, we feel that the kids born after 1971 should be included in this part of ANSCA. And if anybody around here wants to sell land and stuff like that, I think it should be held within the younger kids. It should be sold with, you know, to them or something.
If anybody sells the shares, you mean they should be bought back and turned over to the kids who don't have any shares? Yeah. Are both of you students? Can you tell me what grade you're in?
9th.
10th.
Rachel's in 9 and Anna Marie is in the 10th grade, yeah. Did you want to add anything, Anna Marie?
This corporation should not be opened in 1991. That only the relatives of the village should buy the land. I don't have anything in particular to say.
Okay. Rachel, anything? Well, thank you very much, both of you. That was very helpful. Well, Doric, maybe you could just take the microphone along there. Maybe somebody along there might like to just say a few words from where they're seated.
I'm Sheriff Meganic, and I guess I feel the Zanska right there is really dumped us with a lot of problems right there, not only land-wise, but legal and a lot of legalities right there, is corporate laws that I don't even understand that we have to deal with. And not only with just that, is picking out a lawyer that could represent us and maybe saving our lands or explaining to us what those things might mean to me, or that lawyer there might be representing himself, and when you look at it, he might be the same person that might be after your land too. So it's really hard for me to deal with that, and finding out getting the right lawyer to represent you, having that fear in mind. I feel that that's very unfair because I don't understand corporate law myself and a lot of aspects of it. That's all I have to say right now.
Thanks.
My name is Pat Norman. I'd like to speak on just one section of the act at 14C3, the municipal land that, or that 1,280 acres that the corporation has to give to the state and trust for a future city here in Port Graham. And this requirement is, I think, our biggest problem that we're going to be facing in the future with this. This trust land will have to be managed for the benefit of a future city. You know, if this village doesn't become a city, we won't have any direct control over that land. It will always be indirect through the municipal land trustee. Everybody here has been talking about we're going to lose our lands, and I feel that this is the biggest area that we will be losing it. In that section 14C3.
Well, that's a good point that's been brought up by a lot of other people. Do you know if your local village corporation has conveyed the land to the state yet, or is it still holding it?
No, we haven't. We're just starting work on that right now, or during this year we will be working on it. But corporation, they haven't any choice but to do it, and the biggest problem I see is with the village government. Getting that land to our people, you know, for places to live, and get it free like we got our land.
Well, what kind of government do you have in the city now? In the village now? Traditional council. And
we have constitution bylaws which is still pending in BIA office in Anchorage.
Just repeating that for the record, since Mr. McGannock doesn't have a microphone before him, and Mr. McGannock is, I understand, the chief of the traditional council.
Yes.
You are organizing under the Indian Reorganization Act, and your proposed constitution is now awaiting approval in Juneau.
Yes, it is.
Well, your point is, I take it, that that if your preference is for a traditional government or IRA government, then why should those 1,280 acres go to the state and not to your the government that you people here have chosen?
Yes, that's where I'd like to see it. But in the Act, you know, it says nowhere in there that if this village doesn't become a city, it'll always have to go through the state to get part of its land, you know.
Well, if you do become a city, the experience of some of the other villages that have become cities is that the 1,280 acres is then transferred to the new state-chartered city government, and it then has to put those, any lots it makes available, up to the highest bidder.
Yes.
And sometimes native people then can't even afford to buy lots in their own village. So it's a real problem that a lot of people have brought up, and I'm glad you've explained what the situation is here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. At the present, we operate, we're recognized on the tradition of council. We also
buy
600 ton site, which village had. We already had, we do got a patent to a trustee, on BLM trustee.
Could you just repeat that, Mr. McGannock? I was fooling around with the microphone, and I wanted to get that.
1966, restricted town site, which was somewhere 450 acres. At the present, went down to 350. It's already in PLM trusteeship. George Gustafson got the deed. Town site being surveyed, approved, patented. Patent is in a PLM office. George Gustafson, I have that. And my question is always, is 1,280 acres going to duplicate this restricted town site? And also, state recognized the village councils are entity on that 1,280 acres. Corporation has to transfer that whatever to the village council. Then from village council goes to the state trustee. There's a duplication on the restricted town site and 1,280 acres.
Well, I take it your point is that it would be simplified if the traditional council were recognized as the logical entity to receive the 1,280 acres.
Yeah.
I don't know where the roving microphone landed, but any of those
Larry Hedrick again. This is probably relevant to what Pat had to say about some of the children not receiving lots in the village. Several of my children have left the village and probably won't return because they have to make a living that they couldn't make here in order to purchase a lot. And you probably see in the future a lot of children leave this village because of the seasonal work. And if they have to purchase a lot to live on here, that seasonal work probably won't be enough to pay for it. And you'll see a lot more children leave here than our native children going off somewhere else.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Hedrick.
One item on restricted townsite. Litigation got something to do with that restricted townsite. We can't do anything till that case is decided. If you're familiar with that.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Village of Litnikik. Fire litigation. It's a complicated situation at the present time. That's why I never touched it. I never monkey with it when I was in a corporation office. I was going to, but I waited till it's everything cleared up.
Again, there was one thing when I was speaking on subsistence I really feel strongly about is that I think Native people should be in the governing or controlling or what do you want to call it, regulation, maintenance and making of our subsistence. I think they also should be, the Native people of our community, the fishermen or the people, should be also involved in the management through fish and game of our salmon, our wildlife. I think other than the advisory boards, I serve on the village local fisheries advisory board. True, we have some say, but I think Native people would be in better control, better managers, if they were left with that role.
Thank you. Perhaps this gentleman next to Mr. Tabios would like to add something before we... No, I just wondered if the gentleman next to you would like to...
I'm Riley Meganic, and I live in the village all my life. I just want to repeat on the stock of our children that they should have another chance at getting a chance to enroll again. That's all I ask.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Well, anybody else like to say something? Yes. Sure.
Pretty interested in hoping that the youth, the young children, this girl's age, 10, 12, on up, or even younger, would express their views and feelings about the Land Claims Act. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts or what most of the children thought and felt in other areas. Were they pretty much the same, or were they pretty diverse, you know, different?
Well, last winter and last spring, before school got out, we had a lot of, when we went to villages for meetings like this, we had a lot of school children, students, just like Rachel and Anne-Marie would speak, quite a few in every village. But that was because they knew we were coming and they would have discussions in the school. And well, just as Mr. Hensley spoke for some of the teachers and some of the students, we've had a lot of students coming to speak. And I guess that will start again now that school's back and the students are participating in these discussions in school. But we've had people of all ages really speaking, and I think it's been very worthwhile. Here tonight, it seems to me we've had a pretty good cross section of all ages, and I find that very helpful. I think that you know, my own philosophy is that people really talk out loud about what's really going on in their heads, then we can work this out. And that's why coming to the villages seems to me to make a lot of sense, because here people really tell us what's on their minds. You know, when I agreed to do this job, I could have gone to Anchorage and talked to the native leaders and the people in the government and BIA and gone to the university and talked to some of the experts there and written a report, but what would it all mean? Probably not very much. And since we've got a little time, maybe I should tell you that in the 1970s, I spent 3 years in the Canadian Arctic doing a commission on land claims for the Canadian government, and I went to all the villages, Eskimo and Indian villages in the Canadian Arctic, and we had all the people come to meetings like this and talk about their land claims, and in the end I wrote a report based on what the people told me, and there were people of all ages from all villages, and the government said to me, "You mean that's what those people really want? They've got land claims and they want to continue to live in those villages and they think subsistence is important." And the government hadn't really understood that, because they thought all the people in those villages wanted to get out of those villages as soon as they could and wanted to move into the big cities and live like white people. No. They really were surprised that people felt very strongly about their identity as Eskimos and Indians and about their way of life, and they were proud of their past and they wanted to make sure that their land continued to be Eskimo land and Indian land. And so the government was prepared to listen to what those people had to say. And so when I was asked to come here and review the land claims in Alaska, I decided it would be better to come to the villages and towns like this, because only in this way would I find out what people are really concerned about. And it's, I think, the best way to do it. And we're hearing from people of all ages in all regions, and We've had people from the corporations and people from the traditional governments and ordinary people who aren't officials or boards of directors or anything else. So I find with each meeting, I learn something more. And I think by the time I'm through, the picture will be for me complete, and I can write a report that will be based on what you've told me. And then Native people will be able to go to Congress and the state government and say, look, this guy spent 2 years in Alaska, he went to all these villages, he listened to all these people, here's what we told him, and he's written it all out. And I hope that when I'm through with this job, that's what I can do for you. And this is the best way to do it, I think. That's why I'm willing to stay here, you know, till bedtime if people have more to say.
Mr. Berger, one more time. My name is Walter Mechanic. Is this...
About three times since 1971. Every statute, every law can be changed, and Congress has the power to change ANCSA. And in the past, Congress has changed some laws relating to Indian people. For instance, in 1887, Congress passed an act that led to the Indian people of the lower 48 losing half of all their land. And when President Roosevelt came into office in 1933, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he asked Congress to change that law to stop the loss of Indian land, and he asked Congress to appropriate money to buy more land to give land back to the Indians. That's the best, and that was the Indian Reorganization Act. And that's the best example, I think, in American history of Congress saying about a law they passed, it was a mistake, we've got to change it, and they did. And that's why the Indians in the lower 48, between 1887 and 1933, lost half of their land, but didn't lose it all. They've still got that, the last half left, and that's because Congress in 1933 changed the law to ensure that they could keep it. ANCSA has already been changed in 1976 and in 1980.
Yeah.
You read the land banking provision. That was a change Congress made.
And also ANCSA itself amended.
Yeah. The most recent example of Congress changing its mind is in the case of the Indians, of some Indians in Wisconsin, the Menominees. In the 1950s, Congress passed a law taking away their land, and then in the 1970s, they passed another law giving it back to them. Don't ask me to explain why they did all that, but those people lost all of their land, and then they went back to Congress and said, "You can't do this to us." It took them 10 years, but Congress then passed a law restoring their land to them and restoring their tribal government to them. So none of these things are written in stone. You know, they're not things that can never be changed.
Mr. Berger, at this time, I think it's about 9 minutes to nine. If there's no more this the morning, or no more, nobody wants to say anything anymore, I guess everybody look tired. Maybe we should adjourn unless somebody wants to testify. Give them a few minutes. Maybe we should
break away from a table, minker around, talk. Give you a chance to talk, talk to these people. Maybe that way you may gain useful information.
Sure. Well, I want to thank all of you who spoke tonight, and I hope it's been useful to you. It's certainly been useful to me and very helpful, and I do appreciate it. And speaking, I know for all those who came with me, we appreciate the supper tonight, and we appreciate the hospitality and the testimony that's been given. We'll be around till tomorrow when we go to English Bay to see what the people there have to say. We've already been to Seward and Eyak and Tatiklek, and by tomorrow we will have taken testimony at 5 communities in the Chugach region, and it's been very helpful to us. So thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Mr. Berger. At this time, at the meeting adjourned. Don't go, people, don't go away. Mink around, talk to him, and meet these two good-looking ladies, and talk to them get acquainted with him for free time, okay? I can leave my stuff here.
Yeah, let's just wait and see. Maybe somebody's there.